Let's talk now to Seb Coe, chairman of the London 2012 Organising Committee and the Prime Minister's Legacy Ambassador. And in fact, he's meeting the Prime Minister to discuss legacy this afternoon. Hello, good morning. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Etienne Stott is with us, won gold in the canoe slalom at London 2012. Hello, welcome to the programme.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Tim Lamb, Chief Executive of the Sport and Recreation Alliance. Now, that's the umbrella body which represents more than 300 sports governing bodies and the UK's 150,000 grassroots clubs. Hello.
Good morning, Victor.
Seb Coe, first of all, the results of the poll, one in five, just under one in five, inspired to take up sport after London 2012. What do you make of that?
I think that's pretty encouraging. I mean, bearing in mind we're 24 weeks into a 10-year, you quite rightly pointed out, Victoria, 10-year programme, to have a 20% uptake on any campaign, if you like to put it in those terms, 24 weeks into something that we know is probably going to come to proper fruition in about 10 years is pretty good. It chimes with the it chimes in large part with some of the research that we ourselves have done in the organising committee that, you know, 70% of people say that their children are now significantly more positive about sport. And I think that the research you've done actually polled people over the age of 18.
Yes, we did adults.
It didn't actually talk to those young people who actually I know are, you know, making a beeline for their local clubs. There are other challenges because already we're beginning to get evidence back that there is quite a long waiting list in some of those clubs, and Tim would certainly know as much about that as anybody. But no, this is a good start.
Etienne, how do you react to the poll results?
I mean, I think it's very positive. You know, if you're saying these 18% equals 9 million people, you know, that's a lot of people going through into these different clubs. And, you know, like, I suppose it's important to say most clubs can probably only deal with, several. You know, they probably can't deal with thousands at a time. So, you know, 9 million is a good start. And I guess if the clubs are supported, they'd be able to get more and more people in. And it will expand, I suppose, as it becomes more fashionable and more exciting to do this sort of thing.
Tim Lamb, the original Sport England target was 1 million more people participating in sport as a direct result of London 2012. This has way exceeded that.
Yeah, I mean, like Seb, I'm very much, glass half full or a glass fifth full, and I'm very encouraged by this. I think the key thing, particularly from the point of view of clubs and the volunteers and people involved with clubs that we speak to, is to ensure that when these people are queuing round the corner to want to have access to clubs and enjoy the facilities that are on offer, that the clubs are able to accommodate the extra numbers.
Mm-hmm. And that is, Seb Coe said it's a challenge. Is that something that you really worry about, Tim Lamb?
Yes, I do, because we also, my organisation, conducted its own poll of volunteers in clubs at the back end of last year. A key issue for clubs is access to decent and cost-effective facilities. Something like two-thirds of clubs actually hire facilities. They don't own their own facilities. And the cost of hiring facilities, particularly with local authority budget cuts and so on, has gone up exponentially. The other thing is that there's much more that can be done to reduce the sort of strangling effect of red tape and associated costs. Your listeners may be interested to know that in order to run your average community sports club, you need something like 33 different licences, including, you know, if you want to raise some extra money to plough back into facilities at the club, you have to pay the same for a liquor licence as the commercial premises next door. So, you know, there are lots of other things that could be done. Another idea we've come up with, which I know is supported personally by the sports minister, is the idea of allowing gift aid on junior club subscriptions. The National Trust can claim gift aid on your annual subscription to the National Trust. Well, can't we help our kids to lead more active, healthy lifestyles by allowing gift aid on junior club subscriptions? Just some of the ideas that we've had which could make an immediate impact.
Seb Coe, in terms of inspiring people,
yep,
is the 6 to 12 month period after a Games the most important, or does it not work like that?
It is important. It's not the only part of the story. Nor is sport the only part of the legacy story here as well. You know, if you look at the work that the legacy team within government has now set about, it is, yes, of course, sport is very important, whether it's about getting the right level of sport in schools or competitive sport outside the curriculum, or as Tim is focusing on, sports participation. But, you know, if you look at the Paralympic legacy. It's not, that's not just simply about getting more young people with disability or impairment into sport or sports facilities. It's also about the 1,000 extra hotel rooms in London over 7 years that were created specifically for the Games of an entirely accessible nature. It cuts into transport, it cuts into communities. So I think the point that we're trying to make is, yes, sport is, of course, very important. And yes, of course, you know, you want to capture the moment before memories start to dim. But over the 10 years, there will be lots of cross-cutting areas where the Games can help us, whether it's communities, whether it's business, whether it's, yes, getting more young people into sport, and also making sure that that extraordinary story that we all witnessed when we were trooping around the Olympic Park in East London is a story that is still a living, thriving, sustainable community in 10 years' time. Mm.
What are the areas that you're worried about? You'll talk to the Prime Minister this afternoon about your research sort of mirrors ours in terms of the numbers of people participating after the Games. What are the areas that he can help you with that you're worried about?
Well, I think that the broader point I would make is I cannot remember in my sporting life, both as a competitor and for longer, slightly now as an administrator, I can't remember a prime minister so close, a prime minister anywhere in the world so close off the back of a major event, creating a legacy team, galvanising that legacy work across government, and having created the opportunity for people to be able to drive this story forward. So I'm going to say to him this afternoon, look, we're making good progress. There is activity, particularly the encouraging signs we've just talked about in terms of increased sports participation and clearly the increased funding for elite sport, because that's important. I will go to my grave knowing that the greatest driver of participation is the well-stocked shop window. When Sir David Brailsford said to me a year or so ago, look, I can tell you that 500,000 more people are cycling on a regular basis since 2008. I don't need to know that that has a great deal to do with Chris Hoy. So the challenge is converting those big global events that we are going to have over 10 years, whether it's the World Athletics Championships, whether it's hockey, you know, European Hockey Championships, the Commonwealth Games, maybe even a Youth Olympic Games in Glasgow, major championships coming. The real challenge is to convert what we know will be a demand and a spike of interest around them into what shows up in Tim's, 300 governing bodies and, you know, 1,500 clubs and organisations the length and breadth of the UK.
But are you not already letting something slip through your fingers, i.e. handball, for example? You heard what Bill Bailey said.
Yeah,
brought up the link between elite sport.
And let me be clear here. These are not new issues. You know, I've chaired sports councils before. I'm chairman of the British Olympic Association. These are always difficult challenges. You know, there is we have budgets, and we want to make sure UK sport has done that we have the right level of funding going into those sports that are delivering. And from time to time, you know, there are winners and losers in this. And that is never a comfortable experience for a governing body. My own sport, from time to time, one of, you know, the largest of the summer Olympic sports, has had funding reductions because it hasn't at various stages performed. And these are never easy challenges. But you know, you have to make the money that is available go to those areas where clearly success is being recorded.
Mm. Etienne, at a grassroots level, do you have anecdotal evidence that more people are interested in taking up canoeing, for example? And are there the facilities out there for them to do so?
I mean, absolutely. You know, the clubs that I'm involved with, I've got a club in my hometown and a club where I train in Nottingham. Both of them have seen an increase in participation and demand. I guess canoeing is a difficult one because over the winter months it's a little bit less appealing than some sports to continue in. But definitely, you know, there was an interest afterwards. And I think it is down to facilities for sure. But also I think linking into what Lord Coe said about, you know, this legacy, it extends. It's not just about participation in sports. It's about getting more volunteers in to run these clubs, you know, because you need people to come in and be when people are coming in to try canoeing, they need to have people to, you know, set them up with their gear and, you know, need the club to be run in the background. And I think there is an outlet for people to be, you know, who have been inspired, who don't necessarily want to do the sport, but who want to do something in their community and contribute to the, you know, to the benefit of sports in general.
Tim Lamb, what's your view on sport in schools and the links to clubs outside and the government's approach to sport in schools?
Well, I think sport in schools is absolutely crucial. There's a scary statistic which has been doing the rounds recently that something like 30% of all children leaving primary school to go into secondary school are either clinically obese or overweight. And if that's not a reason or a driver for doing more for young people's sports provision, particularly at a young age, I don't know what is. And we await eagerly the government's announcement as to what they're going to be doing with school sport. In fairness, we should wait to see what they have to say. I don't know quite what's going to be in that announcement. It may be that the sports minister may be able to say more later on in the programme. But I just feel that sporting provision, physical literacy among primary school children is absolutely essential. And I would like to see that being more accessible. I know Seb incidentally agrees with me because we've talked about this on a previous occasion. It's a long time since I was the parent of a primary school age child, unfortunately. But I think if my young child couldn't, you know, run, catch, jump or throw, I would want to know about that just as much as I would want to know whether my child was proficient in English or maths.
If I may come in for a moment here, I think there are two issues here, and I think Tim is on the money very much on one of them, that, you know, if you have not got those physical literacies in place, in young people, particularly at primary school level, it's very, very difficult to grab that territory back when they get to 13 or 14. And it's often less about giving them the skills to throw javelins or spin a rugby ball out of a scrum. It's actually about activity. It's setting the scene for them going forward in areas of activity. But there is another issue here, and, you know, this is where Tim and I have very different experiences, because I was only ever educated in the state sector. I never did any competitive sport that fell within the school timetable. I didn't, you know, it wasn't the Wednesday afternoon or the Saturday afternoon. You know, everything I did was created by teachers who had the time and the space and sometimes the energy, and often, and this is the point, Victoria, you made about the link between the local clubs and the local schools. I was inspired to take up track and field by a geography teacher at my school in Sheffield, who coincidentally also had a link into the local club. So from the age of 14, much of my focus was also supported and augmented by the Hallamshire Harriers in Sheffield. And I think that we've got to be very clear when and probably have a slightly more grown-up conversation about school sport and what it really means in quite hard-pressed, challenged communities that tend to be where, you know, the state schools are really driving and creating this. And the one thing I do know over the last 7 years, and let's sort of break a few stereotypes here, I have only ever come across the most extraordinary, focused, inspiring state school teachers who are doing their very best to create sporting opportunities for young people in those schools, often under really difficult circumstances. I do want to see, though, the same emphasis given to physical education, good quality physical education, and the ability for parents to assess the quality of that physical education, particularly in primary schools that Tim talked about, and maybe that's done through Ofsted.